for the moment. Just one or two brief words. Incredibly wide-ranging, Dave. A lot of the references to songs and poems, most of us or many of us will have recognised, certainly. And I remember a lot of them from my younger days. If you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction, sort of was one that stands out for me, Barry Maguire. Barry Maguire actually became an evangelical Christian thereafter. He's still around, I think, actually, still around. And the Pete Seeger song, of course, What Did You Learn in School Today? Incredibly relevant still, of course, isn't it? I'd sort of forgotten about that, but, when you mentioned it, it came back to me in significant detail. And I thought your sort of reference to the various wars on things was interesting. Yes, absolutely, when a government wants to sort of make things seem important and urgent, they declare a war on. And that long list was very striking indeed. The other thing, one of the other things I've noted down is, of course, what E.P. Thompson said about the Soviet Union, said about America's attack on the Soviet Union. E.P. Thompson was a good historian, but he was one of these people on the left, of course, for whom everything America did was sort of automatically worse than everything other capitalist powers did. There used to be, and there still is to a large extent, this sort of obsession on the left with America as the great Satan. It's not something that the party's ever gone in for. The party's always considered the United States just as much a Satan as any other capitalist powers. I think the same sort of applies to a certain extent to what's going on now in Ukraine. A lot of sort of left wingers say it's a proxy American war and so on, which is maybe partly true, but obviously, we don't take sides in situations such as that. But anyway, thanks very much. That was, as I say, very wide ranging. And, a lot of the things you said took me back a long way. I don't know whether you want to sort of say a word in response to that, Dave, or anybody else wants to say something, please do.
Sorry, Howard, thank you. Just to pick up on E.P. Thompson. Was it in response to Protect and Survive, the pamphlet that the government pushed through our doors back in the, I think it was about 1980 thereabouts.
I remember that too, yeah.
And E.P. Thompson wrote Protest and Survive, didn't he? And then he followed that up. There was a Penguin special called Protest and Survive, which was edited by E.P. Thompson and Dan Smith. And of course, included in that was an article by a piece by Bruce Kent. I didn't actually touch on CND, which I think is still going, if people would like to educate me.
It is Dave. It is still going, yeah. But carry on.
Doesn't CND go back to the 1950s? Was it the Committee of 100? And weren't people like the philosopher Bernard Russell? Bertrand Russell? Involved in it as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah. Committee of 100. That's right. Yeah.
I know this is a sort of very big generalisation, but can I just sort of suggest that? In one of those 1984 socially standard articles, the question was asked, you know, what can we do to get people to be made aware of this and to take action to put an end to it completely? Well, join the Socialist Party. But, I mean, for the vast majority of people, they are so, I'm not going to use the word downtrodden, they're so concerned with just everyday life minutiae, yeah, paying bills, going to work, you know, looking after kids, worrying about what's going on, that they're going to go, well, I'm sorry, but I don't have, they go, I don't have time to worry about that, you know, and unless it becomes, well, you know, please goodness it doesn't, really in our faces in the near future. You can understand that. I mean, earlier, before we started, I mean, I don't know if you heard it, but Moggy and Janet were having a very interesting conversation about things that are going on in the world, you know, like the earthquakes in Turkey and Syria and the weather situation in New Zealand. And you cannot fully understand, can't you, you know, where those grab people's attentions. Those are the things people are focused on.
Okay, yeah. Right, thanks, David. Right, we have a contributor now, Alan. Alan Johnston, please speak.
Just to bring in the issue of the anti-war tactics and anti-war movement, I think it's tomorrow Rage Against the War Machine is launching big demonstrations in America. And what's puzzling me is actually who's participating in these anti-war movements. There's Chris Hedges and other well-known left-wing commentators, but there's also the libertarian right-wing who are part of the organisation. People like Ron Paul, the libertarian, and it brings in the issue of strange bedfellows. We know that our anti-war position is not the same as either the left wing or the right wing. And it's something that we really should have to address, for I think demonstrations are taking place in Britain as well. And we have to clearly state a socialist analysis, which we've always done, but it's a voice in the wilderness. And it is unusual for right-wing Republicans like Marjorie Greene, Tucker Carlson, to be on the same side as people like Chris Hedges and other left-wing radicals in America. So we really should have to address the issue of what our strategy should be, not in the past, but in the present and the future. That's basically what I just wanted to comment on.
Thanks, Alan. I'd read myself that the sort of, if you like, far left and far right were coming together in the States to condemn America for causing the war in Ukraine, and presumably sort of letting Putin off the hook as well. There's a sort of bit of a movement towards that in this country as well. Obviously, we want to run a mile from that kind of position, make it absolutely clear. I think we do, and we have. Brian, over to you, Brian Johnson.
Just a short one to say. Pick it up from Aaron in regards to the left-wing response. What I see with the left-wing in regards to the issue of war, they're always against a particular war. Unlike us, they're not against all wars. We raise the banner and say that we're opposed to all wars. In some instances, some party members as well, they also include that of the for class war, to exemplify the fact that they want to see the end of the class war and to bring about socialism, you know. But that said, the left wing are against particular wars. They're not against all wars. I found this very noticeable during that massive demonstration which I took part in as well in 2003, when approximately 2 million people walked the streets of London in opposition to the Iraqi war that had been brought about by Bush and Blair. You know, a lot of the people I spoke to, you know, emphasizing the fact that they were against that particular war. You know, in fact, I spoke to one guy who was very enthusiastic of British involvement in the Falklands War. And he's saying that it was a war for democracy, etc., etc. But the it just goes to show that some people are only interested in opposition to particular wars. They're not, they do not support the banner of opposition to all wars. That's it, I think.
Okay, Brian, many thanks. Do you want to comment on that, Dave, or should we go straight to Moggy?
Oh, no, please go to Moggy.
Okay, over to you, Moggy.
Hello. Yes, I was just quickly looking up something. I don't know whether any of you have seen a film called The King of Hearts or Le Roi de Coeur. It's a 1966 film starring Alan Bates, and it's very clever, very quirky, but it shows you the futility of war. I'll just read you the little blurb about it. This quirky comedic war film focuses on Scottish soldier Charles Plumpick, played by Alan Bates, who is sent to a French town on a mission to disarm a bomb left behind by the retreating German army. Plumpick discovers that the area is deserted, except for the inmates of a local asylum. The mental patients playfully take over the town and pronounce the soldier their king. While Plumpick is intrigued by the antics of the former inmates, he must stay on task and find the bomb before it detonates. And at the end of the film, you really see what the point is that they're putting over. It's who are the real insane ones? Is it the soldiers or is it the inmates from the mental asylum? So you really get a good idea of what they're trying to convey. So if you've not seen it, I recommend you get that from your local library or wherever, or if you can download it. But The King of Hearts or Le Roi de Coeur. Thank you.
Sounds interesting. Yes, indeed. Have we any other takers here? This is unusual. We've got more people than we usually have. And normally we have a hell of a good natter. Right. We've got a couple more now. Adam, over to you.
Yeah, before I joined the Socialist Party, I was a supporter of CND. This is in the early 1960s. At that time, CND had a simple message, stop nuclear tests in the atmosphere. But after I joined, we used to call CND the campaign for conventional warfare. Brian has just said that we're against all wars, but of course CND wasn't against all wars. It was just against one particular, you know, weapon of war. But even so, I think that campaign helped, you know, revive political activism in Britain, and quite a few other members had previously been in CND. But to come to E.P. Thompson, by the 1980s, CND was adopting a different position. It wasn't just opposed to all nuclear weapons. It was just opposed to cruise missiles being established in Europe, which, of course, made it inadvertently a weapon for Russian foreign policy. That's why the so-called Communist Party was supporting CND at that time. So, in fact, CND, if you like, degenerated between 1960 and 1980s into a completely different organization with a different aim, and allowed itself to be used by one of the great powers in their struggle for world domination. So, Dave, you were quoting all these songs and films from the 1960s. I think at one point you said that some of these, this wouldn't just happen today. We'd get a completely different reaction. And I'm wondering why, there was a general anti-war feeling at that time. But I think that what's changed that in Britain was the Falklands War, and of course the various other wars in which, since then, British troops have been involved. I get the impression that people are less opposed to war now than they were in the 1960s and even in the 1980s. And I mean, that's unfortunately a step backwards. But I mean, just as our position has been to oppose all wars, our position is that all wars that are taking place should stop immediately. I mean, that was the position the party took in the First World War. Just stop the killing. But I mean, there's nobody saying that now. People are always saying you've got to give more arms to this side, you've got to support that side, and so on. So it's a bit sad, if you like. But I mean, we have to continue, putting up our position, which presumably has an echo amongst some people.
Thanks, Adam. Dave, I wonder what your take is on that, the idea that people are less opposed to war now than they were, say, in the 60s.
Well, I think what Adam just said was very interesting. Back in the 30s, the Oxford Union had a debate, didn't they, which was basically, would you go and, fight a war for your country? And they voted and said no, we wouldn't. I know it's not sort of definitive, but on social media, and I'm going to say sort of maybe younger people, but I've sort of read a lot of stuff where the question's asked, would you fight if there's a war, if your country was in, but whatever. And people say no, we wouldn't. But I mean that doesn't mean to say that's indicative of the general population's view or whatever. But I mean I think there is a sort of undercurrent of anti. And also I mean I'm only basing this on stuff I've read on social media, but I think it's related to the fact that people are anti-government. They don't trust the government anymore, and so it's like, why should we go and fight for these people? Because they'll screw us over, first chance they get.
Okay, Dave, so it's sort of anti-government rather than anti-war as such, yeah. Right, okay, Steve, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Howard. Thanks, Dave, for your talk. Just on this anti-war stuff that we've seen in the past, of course, it's happening again because We've got this, I think it's called a People's Assembly. There seems to be a small bunch of them active in around Manchester. They seem able to, and as Adam was saying, they seem able to attract a fairly small bunch of people to walk about with the banners demanding an end to this particular war. It's got a thing called Stop the War Coalition and CND. But I do wonder whether, I mean, as in the past, whether there's some sort of lefty supporters of state capitalism involved with this. Because I happen to see, I don't know if anybody's familiar with it, but this absolutely terrible Chinese propaganda newspaper called the Global Times. And they had a video on several weeks ago. And I'm afraid I can't remember the bloody name of the bloke, but it was somebody from accredited, I think, Secretary of the Stop the War Coalition, basically sticking up in favour of the state Chinese state capitalism. So it does appear to me that this tactic of the Bolsheviks is ongoing in something like the People's Assembly. I don't know if anybody else has come across this organisation. They will pick up as many current issues as they possibly can. And of course, it's always, you know, tax the rich, blah de blah. This sort of catch-all emotional stuff. I wonder if anybody else has come across them. I just want, and just another point as well. I mean, what Dave was going on about this, about the cultural, well, actually mainly, but by and large, cultural opposition to war. But I was listening the other day to a program about domestic violence and. Or actually violence. I can't remember whether it was domestic violence or violence in general. And nobody ever raised the issue, or rather, it's always presented as this one-sided issue, not looking at something in its entirety. Whereby I remember as a kid, the school I went to, we used to have this hymn that we sang. Or rather, a song that we sang in assembly called "The British Grenadiers," which, if you know it, is the bit that I can remember is "Some Talk of Alexander." No, I can't remember it. "Some Talk of Alexander," something about Achilles and about Hector
and Lysander, and such great names as these.
Such great names as these. We were being presented with massive murderers in terms of Alexander the Great, or the cause of mass murder in terms of Alexander the Great, violent Bronze Age warriors as some sort of role model, and this is really pernicious. It really is pernicious, and we shouldn't ignore. I mean, I remember as a kid that being revolted by the television pictures that came back from Vietnam, and you could see kids running away naked or injured by the bombs and stuff like that. What we've got these days is stuff that looks like video games. When they put it on, when they relate to bomb bunker busters and stuff like that they were using in the wars in the Middle East, it all looked like a bloody video game. And, you know, I wonder if people have got a bit of disconnect in, because of that. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Mike Foster.
Thanks. Thanks, Dave, for the talk. Yeah, it was really lively and lots of wide-ranging examples to sort of bring your points to life. So, yeah, thanks. I enjoyed that. With what Steve just said, I can't say I've heard of the people that you mentioned. So, can't sort of add to that. But the point I was going to make, I sort of grew up in the 80s, so I remember how sort of culture was sort of infused with the threat of the bomb at the time, and you know how that was expressed in, you know, as you pointed out, you know, sort of pop videos, songs, you know, sort of TV programs, you know, rather sort of grim ones, from what I remember. And you know, for a while afterwards, you know, after the Cold War ended, you know, you could almost get sort of nostalgic for that sort of part of sort of culture in especially the early 80s. But of course now it's bounced back with the you know, the sort of situation in with the war in Europe. But yeah, it doesn't sort of feel quite the same as it did in the 80s, and I suppose that's because as sort of global threats go, you know, war has got a bit of competition, hasn't it, from you know, climate change, you know, we've only sort of just got over the pandemic, you know, the cost of living crisis. So yeah, war has got a bit of competition now. Maybe that's why it's not quite on our radar as much as it was in you know, either the 80s or when there was the Iraq war protests. Yeah, it's been sort of overcrowded in the things to worry about. Yeah, but yeah, thanks anyway. Yeah, thanks. Cheers.
Thanks, Mike. Dougie, over to you.
I mean there's been about 100,000 people killed on both sides in this Ukraine war that started last February or whatever. I mean, the West and the media, I mean, they banned RT and they're portraying, you know, the Ukrainian leader as some sort of hero or whatever. You know, they're all going around hugging them and promising them weapons and things. I mean, my position on the thing was, the Ukrainians should just let the Russians roll in and save their lives, really, you know, and just not kind of work with them, you know, just protest and until they could kick them out. I mean, they're just making Zelensky out to be some sort of hero, really, and he's a warmonger, really, you know. I mean, Putin was terrible, you know, going in there, you know, with the Russian soldiers, but I mean, my response has always been, we don't support war, really. You know, my advice to Ukrainians would be to get out, really, you know, or just don't take part in it, really. You know, don't become cannon fodder like the Russian soldiers. But I mean, all the political parties in this country, the Greens and everybody, supported Ukraine, really, you know. I mean, I've been playing chess in Bakhmut recently, and some of the people there had Ukrainian flags, you know, little things on the jacket, you know. And you know, I mean, years ago, you know, the First World War, some of the ILP people who had been elected to Parliament, you know, they went off to fight, you know, in the First World War. So nationalism and supporting your side or whatever, you know, most political people cave in and take sides, right? You know, we shouldn't do that, right? You know, we should oppose war, capitalist wars, because as people dying, you know, for the ruling class, you know, for their oligarchs or whatever.
Thanks, Turkey. Yeah, I think the party has made it clear that, you know, it opposes war, full stop, and it opposes the war that's taking place currently in Ukraine, you know, without, definitely doesn't support one side or the other. Anything arising, Dave, from what you've just heard?
Oh, thank you. If you go on to Wikipedia and you look for anti-war songs or and anti-war films, there is an absolutely huge list, you know, which go back and, you know, and sort of contemporary as well. Can I indulge your thing? Can I just read you another verse from something? Because, you know, I think that sort of popular culture, what are we saying? I mean, you know how people respond emotionally or whatever to say a song or a poem, but particularly a song. I'm not suggesting that we start writing our own, but I mean, there's been some absolute sort of belters, anti, haven't there? I'm sure everybody knows this. It's called "And the Band Played Waltzing Matilda," and this is about what it's really like. So they gathered the crippled, the wounded, the maimed, and they shipped us back home to Australia. The legless, the armless, the blind, the insane, those proud wounded heroes of Suvla. And as our ship pulled into Circular Quay, I looked at the place where my legs used to be. And thank Christ there was nobody waiting for me to grieve, to mourn, and to pity. But the band played Waltzing Matilda as they carried us down the gangway. But nobody cheered. They just stood and stared. Then they turned all their faces away. I mean, I think that's pretty powerful. I don't know what you think.
It is, Dave, very powerful indeed, yeah. It's an amazing anti-war song, that band played Waltzing Matilda, yeah, it is, yeah. Okay, Alan, over to you.
It's just to carry on from what Steve was saying about war being depicted as a video game. It has been very much sanitised these days. I was going through John Bissett's old blog, Class Warfare, and he has several images of actual dead people on it, the brains splattered. This, like Dave was saying, the actual atrocities of actual being dead, wounded, etc. And he's got pictures of these. But surprisingly, with all our social media, with all our on-the-spot news coverage, they won't show these pictures, they won't show these images. They refuse to show the reality of war. I watched it again yesterday. I saw a video from a drone, a Ukrainian drone, of Russian soldiers evacuating a wounded person and how the Ukrainians shelled it. These were people being caring for the wounded, and the good guys were sending mortar shells over to kill them all. But there was no comment on it, and it was so far away, it was like a video game. You didn't realise that these were actual real people suffering and eventually getting killed. And it's just what Steve's saying, is that we've turned war into a video game, and Hollywood and the media, it's much more powerful than the anti-war songs Dave has been talking about. They're the ones that are creating the images that people are absorbing and accepting, that war is humane, that it's a clean surgical strikes, that there's no collateral damage. And really, I have to blame the media for declaring these things by censoring them. They censor the reality of war, and people foolishly think war doesn't kill people. That's basically what I wanted to say.
Thanks, Alan. John, over to you.
Just further to the idea of the sanitization of warfare. It's a thing that's been prevalent in the media for quite some time. Although from time to time you do get some honourable exceptions who want to show the true awfulness of war and not just go on about how futile it is, But then when you suggest how it might be done away with, then you see that futile is just a word for them. And by the way, war is not futile, because there are, as we know, there's a class of people who benefit from it. But there was a woman called Mary Whitehouse, you probably all remember her, and she criticised people who were producing films that made war a little bit too realistic. I can't remember the details of it, but I do remember her answer at the time, because when she was taken to task for why she opposed these films or these plays, what she said was, the reason I oppose such depiction of war is that it would make it impossible for this country to fight another war. So although she was obviously considered a little suburban idiot, nonetheless, she was clued in to what was in the interests of the British capitalist class. She was very much aware of that. She might not have thought of it in those terms, but she would have thought of it in terms of, this is what is right and proper. And that was her take on it, that it would be impossible for this country to fight another war if people's heads were filled with the notion that war was as horrific as it actually is. So that's just one person's take on it. And I'm sure a lot of the people who are similar to her in their opinions have opposed, opposed films that are very, very, opposed films that are too horrific as far as war's concerned. Their depiction is too accurate. A lot of people don't like that because it doesn't serve the interest of the capitalist class. Whether they fully realise that or not, they are, unfortunately, they are nationalistic. And that's a thing that we obviously always have to guard against. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Just to say that there may be people whose devices don't allow them to put their hands up, but they want to speak. If they do so, don't hesitate to butt in. And, that's another way you can actually make a contribution. I don't know if everyone's seen this, but Jane has put a message on the chat facility which says, All Quiet on the Western Front film is reaching a lot of people. Yeah, that's been talked about quite a bit recently, hasn't it? Okay. Adam, back to you.
Just to answer something that Steve asked about the Stop the War Coalition. The one time the president or chair of that was Jeremy Corbyn. So he's made a quick rise and disappearance. And of course, he got a lot of stick for denouncing the First World War as useless. I mean, I remember the 50th anniversary of the start of the First World War, and the papers at the time were all saying it's a waste of time. But now, when it came to the 100th anniversary of it, people say, "Oh no, this was an important an important war." But the ideology behind the Stop the War Coalition is anti-imperialism, which in fact means anti-American, anti-Western imperialism. Alan, who's here, will confirm that there's a persistent person on our website forum, which is his position, is that you have to support Russia in this war because it's resisting imperialism. Ignoring the fact that all capitalist states are imperialistic if they can get away with it, including Russia. But what is odd in his case is that he claims to be a socialist. Well, you know, Putin claims to be, you know, the ideological smokescreen isn't socialism. It's defending Orthodox Christianity and its values, which of course, I mean that isn't what he's doing. But I mean, that's, as I say, that's the smokescreen that we have to deal with. But other people on the left are supporting Ukraine on the grounds of the right to self-determination. So I mean, these are arguments which we need to deal with when we're arguing with people on the left, you know, the anti-imperialist one and the right of nations to self-determination, which we know is in fact the the right of a particular ruling class to rule over a particular part of the part of the globe. But I mean, that's us arguing with the left wingers, with the with the general public. We can do as Dave has done. We argue about the horrors of war and the uselessness of war and why wars are fought and so on.
Thanks, Adam. Mike Foster, back to you.
Thanks. Just a quick point on suppressed war films. There's of course the mid-60s film The War Game by one of my heroes, Peter Watkins, which was made for the BBC in the mid-60s and was suppressed as an agreement between the BBC and the government because they felt it would be too horrific because of the way it depicted the aftermath of a nuclear war. It wasn't as explicit as Threads, which was made and shown by the BBC in 1984. But, times have moved on by then. But Peter Watkins, he's directed several anti-war films or films about war. Taking a stance against them from an almost a socialist, possibly, point of view, including a film which lasts 14 hours, which I haven't seen, about a nuclear war threat in the 80s. And also other wars as well. He's written about, done films about, rather like Culloden as well, his breakthrough film. Just a shout out for Peter Watkins there and his stance against war. Yeah, cheers.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for that. While we're waiting to see if anybody else wants to come on, can I just sort of take another aspect of this? Early this evening, I went to a meeting organised by Just Stop Oil. People will have heard of them. They're one of these organisations like Extinction Rebellion, Insulate Britain and so on, who've got a particular sort of focus. They want to see a particular thing happen. And it was quite a sort of well-attended meeting, 40 or 50 people there. Our presence sort of put the average age up by about 20 years, I think, because, most of the people there were youngster students, shall we say. And they were sort of obviously well versed in the kind of arguments that were being put, the things that were said. But this is all part of what I suppose can be called a single issue syndrome. People focus on particular issues within the system and do their damnedest to try and resolve those. They usually fail, of course, as we've seen sort of time and time again over the decades. CND's been mentioned. Etc. CND's been mentioned. The civil rights movement was mentioned in the meeting today, and of course you've got these various other campaigns that have taken place in the last 10 or 20 years, Occupy, and now these environmental ones. And sometimes they have a modest amount of success. It could be argued that, for example, anti-apartheid was successful, in that it, you know, it put on a certain amount of pressure to get the situation in South Africa changed. Whether it's had much of a beneficial effect for most of the people who were suffering there is debatable. But yes, it's part of this sort of single issue syndrome you get in capitalism, whereby people miss the bigger picture. They think that if you can solve one particular problem, then you know, that's great, and that's what they want to do, rather than realize that all these problems, all these single issues, are part of a bigger problem. And it's the problem, of course, of production for profit, which is at the basis of all these things, and which a lot of people have worked out and are writing books about. But nevertheless, you know, it's something that is still in its, well, as far as I can see, in terms of people's overall consciousness, in its relative infancy. Are there any more single issues people want to mention? Alan, I notice Alan Johnston has put on the chat a reference to a film called Punishment Park, Peter Watkins's Punishment Park. Of course, Mike just mentioned Peter Watkins. Yeah, it is a film I've heard of, but not seen. Are there any more comments? It's getting towards 9 o'clock, which is the time that we sort of start to wind up these meetings very often. We can do that if people want to, but what I'll do first of all is ask Dave if he's any sort of final, any concluding comments to make on the subject.
That's gone quickly. My goodness, that has gone quickly. I think that's been a very interesting discussion. There was mention, again, from the 1984 Socialist Standard article about how party members went through, you know, some people went, well, I mean, they went to prison and whatever. They had a really rough time. And, of course, that's in... Baltrop's book, isn't it? You know, the monument about that too. And there's a songwriter, reasonably local to me. And I'll just give you these short few lines, because he wrote a song and it's called The Deserter. And I suppose if you know, that's a word, if you say, what, you know, to somebody, deserter, what's your immediate reaction to that? And they're going to come back with a sort of negative thing. Not everyone, but, you know, you're going to get a negative response to that. But this verse goes, so I ran from the fighting, threw down my gun, and I ran by the moon and slept by the sun. Now, arrested by government, charged by the king to be shot, because I can't kill in order to bring peace to a foreign land. Again, that's up on my list of favourite songs with an important message.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks very much indeed. Okay. Right. Well, it has been an interesting session. Thanks for the sort of unusual talk, really, which, you know, brought in all these cultural references, musical, literary. We should perhaps sort of think about doing more such things in the future. Can anyone remember or remind us what next week's meeting, the topic of next week's meeting is?
Isn't it Glenn Morris speaking on What's in a Name, is it?
Oh, Glenn Morris. Yes, I recommend Glenn Morris. Glenn Morris is especially worth listening to. People want to come next Friday. Yeah, you're right, Adam. Yeah, okay. Fine. Okay, well, thanks. Thanks to everyone. And good night. Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much. Cheerio.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.